the sordid history of sterility vaccines. It wasn't the first time that Catholic medical authorities accused the WHO of a stealth sterilization campaign against African women. As early as November 1993, Catholic publications charged that the WHO was spiking tetanus vaccines to neuter dark-skinned women globally with potent abortifacients. WHO denied the explosive charges. Shaw's research team showed that WHO and Rockefeller Foundation scientists began research on anti-fertility vaccines for birth control as early as 1972 by lacing HCG with tetanus toxoid, which acts as a carrier for the hormone. That year, WHO researchers at a meeting of the U.S. National Academy of Sciences reported their successful creation of a birth control vaccine that diminishes the beta-HCG essential to a successful pregnancy and causes at least temporary infertility. Subsequent experiments proved that repeated doses could extend infertility indefinitely. By 1976, WHO scientists had successfully conjugated a functional birth control vaccine. The WHO researchers reported triumphantly that their formula could induce abortions in females already pregnant and/or infertility in recipients not yet impregnated. They observed that repeated inoculations prolong infertility. More recently, in 2017, WHO researchers were working on more potent anti-fertility vaccines using recombinant DNA. WHO publications explain that the agency's long-range purpose is to reduce population growth in unstable, less developed countries. The Kenyan tetanus campaign occurred shortly after Gates made his pledge of $10 billion to the WHO with the stated purpose of reducing population with new vaccines. Perhaps to emphasize his commitment to population control, Gates recruited his most influential vizier, Christopher Elias, as president of global development at the Gates Foundation in the following year. Prior to that appointment, Dr. Elias was president, CEO of Gates's nonprofit PATH, which partners with pharmaceutical companies to distribute vaccines to poor countries by persuading rich and poor governments to fork over moolah to multinational drug makers in which Gates is invested. Elias ran PATH's innovative Siana Press injectable Depo Provera project designed to end-run U.S. safety regulations while reducing fertility of black African women. That brainchild earned Elias the Klaus Schwab Foundation's Social Entrepreneur of the Year Award in 2005. The Gates Foundation provided numerous grants to PATH, including one in November 2020, after Elias had moved over to BMGF, to support clinical development of COVID-19 vaccines by Chinese manufacturers. Before PATH, Elias had been senior associate in the International Programs Division of the Population Council, with the responsibility of dampening fecundity throughout Southeast Asia. John D. Rockefeller III founded the Population Council in 1952 at a conference he convened for the High Priesthood of Population Control, including the director of the new Planned Parenthood Federation of America and several well-known eugenicists. Lamenting that modern civilization had reduced the operation of natural selection by saving more weak lives and enabling them to reproduce, resulting in a downward trend in genetic quality, the group agreed to create an organization devoted to the reduction of fertility. While Rockefeller formally launched the council with a grant of $100,000 and served as the first president, the next two council presidents were Frederick Osborne and Frank Notstein, both members of the American Eugenics Society. The NIH and USAID were among the startup funders, and U.S. and foreign governments soon became the council's largest financial backers. The Council does research promoting the use of artificial birth control and abortion and biomedical research to discover and develop new contraceptive drugs and technologies. It collaborated with the Ford Foundation and International Planned Parenthood Foundation to develop large-scale IUD programs abroad, despite its own research doctors warning about acute adverse side effects. Later, the Council played a key role in developing the extremely dangerous hormonal contraceptive implant, Norplant. Historian Donald T. Critchlow wrote that the Population Council cultivated elite connections and avoided public controversy by identifying itself as a neutral scientific organization. The U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, conducted a decades-long partnership with the Population Council and cultivated long-term alliances with the Rockefeller Foundation and the WHO, researching the use of fertility controls to reduce world population, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. By 2014, Gates and Elias had a reliable collaborator at the federal program, USAID Director Rajiv Shah, who had, prior to winning that appointment, worked a decade for the Gates Foundation, running Gavi's immunization program for African children. Dr. Shah joined the Gates Foundation in 2001 and oversaw its alliance with the Rockefeller Foundation in launching the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa. He directed the International Finance Facility for Immunization. The IFFI is a shady agency that finances Bill Gates's global vaccine enterprises in developing nations through a diabolically innovative bond issuance scheme that runs up huge debts in poor countries to finance Gates's self-serving vaccines. Using sleight of hand, IFFI enriches Gates's pharma partners with Western financial bonds by passing the costs to future generations in poor countries. Shah raised $5 billion through this swindle for Gavi. At USAID, his primary responsibility was reorganizing the agency to reflect its new biosecurity direction under Obama's 2009 executive order. Shah left USAID to become president of the Rockefeller Foundation in 2017. Shah has deep links to the intelligence agencies and the oil and chemical cartels. Shah serves on both the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations, two globalist organizations that the Rockefeller-Kissinger alliance largely defined. Shah is a board member of the International Rescue Committee, a nonprofit with long-standing CIA ties. In his 1991 book, Covert Network, Progressives, the International Rescue Committee, and the CIA, University of Massachusetts economics professor Eric Thomas Chester exposes IRC as a CIA front. Bill Casey, a lifelong spy, who as Ronald Reagan's CIA director helped manage the Iran-Contra affair in the 1980s, chaired IRC from 1970 to 1971. IRC operates in 40 countries doing humanitarian aid. According to its current CEO, David Miliband, the former UK Foreign Secretary, Shah's role on the high-level council is to monitor political and non-health issues related to prevention and preparedness imperatives for a potential epidemic of global proportions. In 1974, USAID and WHO collaborated on the creation of a top-secret Kissinger report. Henry Kissinger, whose patron was Nelson Rockefeller and whose career was deeply enmeshed with the Rockefeller Foundation, drafted the classified White Paper, which became official U.S. policy under President Gerald Ford in 1975. That report, known as the U.S. National Security Study Memorandum 200, outlined the geopolitical incentives for reducing population growth in less developed countries, LDCs, to near zero by reducing fertility so as to safeguard the economic interests of the United States and other industrialized nations in imported mineral resources. Kissinger observed that the industrialized West was already having to import significant quantities of aluminum, copper, iron, lead, nickel, tin, uranium, zinc, chromium, vanadium, magnesium, phosphorus, potassium, cobalt, manganese, molybdenum, tungsten, titanium, sulfur, nitrogen, petroleum, and natural gas at high cost. The Kissinger Report anticipated rising prices as population growth triggered instability in African nations. The high-level U.S. government commitment explains the WHO's monumental commitment to sterility vaccines. Shaw et al. Found 150 research publications emanating from WHO on various infertility formulations between 1976 and 2016, with many thousands of citations. In the years 1993 and 1994, WHO launched anti-fertility vaccination campaigns in Nicaragua, Mexico, the Philippines, and Kenya in 1995. In each country, WHO and local government clinicians vaccinated women of childbearing age, telling them that the purpose of the WHO immunizations was to eliminate maternal and neonatal tetanus. A subsequent WHO study of birth control policy, Bryant et al., acknowledged that WHO's family planning services had involved routinely deceiving the persons served, with sterilization procedures being applied without full consent of the patient. Similarly, a 1992 study titled Fertility Regulating Vaccines, published by the UN and WHO Program of Research Training in Human Reproduction, reported cases of abuse in family planning programs dating from the 1970s, including incentives such as women being sterilized without their knowledge, being enrolled in trials of oral contraceptives or injectables without consent, and not being informed of possible side effects of the intrauterine device, IUD. The authors of that WHO report advised their partners against characterizing their work as anti-fertility measures for population control, observing that milder descriptions like family planning and Planned Parenthood were more palatable for public appetites. Speaking on behalf of the WHO, Bryant et al. Admitted it is perhaps more conducive to a rights-based approach to implement family planning programs in response to the welfare needs of people and communities rather than in response to international concern for global overpopulation. The targeted regions for the WHO tetanus campaigns are principally the same developing nations that the Kissinger Report targeted. For example, a 2015 news release by Associated Press announced tetanus immunization campaigns to take place in Chad, Kenya, and South Sudan by the end of 2015 and contribute toward eliminating maternal natal tetanus in Pakistan and Sudan in 2016, saving the lives of countless mothers and their newborn babies. The Kenya schedule was identical to the one published for the WHO birth control conjugate of tetanus toxoid linked to beta-HCG, 5 spaced doses of TT vaccine at 6-month intervals, which of course strongly contrasts with the published schedule for authentic tetanus immunization schedules. Raja Bill and his Indian jabs. Polio vaccine. Following his seminal meeting with Dr. Fauci in 2000, Gates launched a global polio vaccine campaign, pledging $450 million through BMGF of a $1.2 billion total and promising to eradicate polio by decade's end. Improved nutrition, Disease Management, and UNICEF's vaccine program had vanquished polio in India in 2011, meaning that the disease occurred in fewer than 300 people per year. Doctors diagnosed just over 200 new cases in 2012. WHO declared the malady eradicated after its five-year near absence in 2016. By that year, polio affected only about 2,000 sufferers globally. The last few hundred cases of an endemic disease are always the most difficult and expensive to prevent. But, apparently, the glory of claiming the triumph for its total obliteration appealed to Bill Gates as an irresistible challenge. He vowed against sage advice to eradicate polio and successfully exhorted rich and poor nations to finance his cause. Even the high-end polio vaccines used in Western nations are linked to injuries and illnesses that dwarf historical harms from polio. A short list of these include the highly contagious SV40 monkey virus that scientists believe is responsible for the explosion of deadly soft tissue cancers in baby boomers, and the chimpanzee coryza agent that entered polio vaccines at the Walter Reed Hospital laboratories in 1955 and caused the devastating pandemic of respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, that the WHO estimates today causes 3 million hospitalizations annually and 60,000 deaths in children under 5 and 14,000 deaths among adults 65 years and older. In order to discourage public discussion of those embarrassing abscesses on its sacred cow, HHS in 1984, the year Anthony Fauci became director of NIAID, quietly pushed through an astonishing federal regulation that reflected the agency's institutional culture of paranoia, secrecy, and imperiousness, but not America's democratic values or the U.S. Constitution. Any possible doubts, whether or not well-founded, about the safety of the vaccine cannot be allowed to exist in view of the need to assure that the vaccines will continue to be used to the maximum extent consistent with the nation's public health objectives. Federal Register, Volume 49, Number 107. Most Americans are shocked to learn that today this abominable regulation is the law of our land. To complicate these problems, the low-rent polio vaccines Gates uses in Africa and Asia are dramatically different from those used in Western countries. The BMGF committed more than $1 billion pushing an oral polio vaccine, OPV, that contains a live polio virus across the global south. This live virus can replicate inside a child's gut and spread in regions with substandard sanitation and plumbing. That means people can contract the virus from the vaccine. Gates's program created windfall profits for pharmaceutical behemoths that could not market such dangerous products in Western countries. Experts argued that Gates's attempts to exterminate polio would be counterproductive. Extirpating the final dwindling dead-end infections requires carpet-bombing entire regions with massive vaccination batteries, raising the paradoxical risk of vaccine-strain polio epidemics. I can't see myself how we can satisfactorily eliminate the vaccine-derived strains, said Professor Donald Henderson, a distinguished scholar at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center for Biosecurity. I just don't think it can be done. Henderson is the renowned WHO epidemiologist who led the successful campaign against smallpox during the 1960s. Ignoring such advice, Gates declared war on polio in India and implemented a shock and awe strategy to exterminate those last few cases. Gates took control of India's Vaccine Oversight Panel, the National Advisory Board, NAB, by stacking it with loyalists and friendly PIs. Under his control, the NAB mandated an astonishing barrage of 50 polio vaccines, up from 5, for each child in several key Indian provinces before they reached the age of 5. As Henderson predicted, vaccine-derived poliovirus, a mutation of the virus contained in the oral vaccine, came back to bite Gates and the unfortunate populations of the nations that submitted to his prescriptions. Indian doctors blame the Gates campaign for a devastating vaccine strain epidemic of acute flaccid myelitis, a disease formerly classified as polio, that paralyzed 491,000 children in these provinces between 2000 and 2017, in direct proportion to the number of polio vaccines that Dr. Gates's minions administered in each area. Non-polio acute flaccid paralysis, NPAFP, is clinically indistinguishable from polio, but twice as deadly, according to Keith Van Herren, child neurologist at the Stanford School of Medicine. Van Herren explains that acute flaccid myelitis, AFM, is a polite term for polio. It actually looks just like polio, but that term really freaks out the public health people. In 2012, the British medical journal Riley noted that polio eradication in India has been achieved by renaming the disease. That year, the disillusioned Indian government dialed back Gates's vaccine regimen and evicted Gates's cronies and PIs from the NAB. Polio paralysis rates dropped precipitously. After squandering half of its total budget on the polio epidemic, at Gates's direction, the WHO reluctantly admitted that the global polio explosion is predominantly vaccine strain, meaning it is happening because of Gates's vaccine program. The most frightening epidemics in Congo, the Philippines, and Afghanistan are all linked to the vaccines he promoted. Polio had disappeared altogether from each of those nations until Gates reintroduced the dreaded disease with his vaccine. In Syria, the Gates-backed Gavi committed $25 million for polio immunization in 2016. The following year, the WHO reported that 58 Syrian children had been paralyzed by the vaccine-derived form of the virus. Other vaccine-strain polio outbreaks occurred in China, Egypt, Haiti, and Malaysia. A study by Oxford's Clinical Infectious Diseases Periodical found that Gates's oral polio vaccine is not only giving kids polio, but also seems to be ineffective in stopping polio transmission. By 2018, the WHO conceded 70% of global polio cases came from Gates's vaccines. As the British Medical Journal reported in 2012, the most recent mass polio vaccination programs in India, fueled by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, resulted in increased cases of polio. In an interview with NPR, Professor of Microbiology Raul Endino said, "It's actually an interesting conundrum. The very tool you are using for polio eradication is causing the problem." Dr. Henderson argued that Gates's futile campaign would strip money from other areas of need, forcing nations to prioritize polio immunization at the expense of other public health investments. Arthur Kaplan, an eminent bioethicist and a polio vaccine fanatic who himself suffered from polio as a child, also criticized Gates's obsession with polio eradication, pointing out that government budgets and resources in poor nations are diverted from other far more pressing local problems to try and capture the last marginal cases. Donald Henderson observes that only Western nations and billionaires like Gates consider eliminating the disease as a priority. Polio kills far fewer people in developing regions than scourges such as malaria, TB, malnutrition, and the greatest killer, dysentery from deficient water supplies. When Gates first floated his dream of eradicating polio, developing nations feared a diversion of resources towards an area where the money was least warranted. When you're doing polio, you're not doing other things, Henderson says. At least through 2011, in several countries, Nigeria, India, and Pakistan, they were giving polio vaccines. In 2012, there were only 223 reported cases of polio worldwide. By any measure, polio is not one of the world's greatest killers. Road accidents, for example, kill about 1.25 million people each year. Measles kills about 150,000 children each year. A number of villagers say, "What is polio? We've never seen it. Why are we worried about it?" Rather than provoking reevaluation, Henderson's concern seems to infuriate Gates. "I've got to get my D.A. Henderson response down better," Gates mumbled to one of his aides in 2011, after the New York Times editorial board interviewed him during his transglobal trek, soliciting rich and poor governments to ratchet up their commitment to his polio enterprise. A reporter overheard and reported Gates's whispered comment. That response suggests that he is aware of the criticism by the man most knowledgeable about eradicating diseases. Instead of integrating Henderson's critique into his strategy or executing a mid-course correction, Gates treated Henderson's caveats as a marketing challenge and lumbered onward. His imperviousness to self-assessment allows him to treat the hundreds of thousands of casualties of his policies as acceptable collateral damage in his self-serving schemes for humanity. Gates's strategic investments have made him immune to criticism by the media and the scientific community, and so, despite these atrocities, the Gates Foundation steers WHO like a rogue destroyer, floundering forward full speed ahead through the mayhem and the carnage of dead and paralyzed children whose ruined lives bob in their wake. In 2020, the BMGF boasted that the WHO is now providing unprecedented levels of technical assistance for polio vaccination campaigns in Nigeria, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. HPV vaccine. In 2009 and 2012, the Gates Foundation funded tests of experimental HPV vaccines developed by Gates's partners GSK and Merck on 23,000 girls 11 to 14 years old in remote provinces of India. These experiments were part of Gates's effort to bolster those companies' sketchy claims that HPV vaccines protect women against cervical cancer that might develop in old age. Gates and his foundation have large investments in both companies. Since deaths from cervical cancer occur on average at age 58 in the United States and affect only 1 in 40,000 women, and since virtually all these deaths are preventable with early detection by pap smears, any vaccine given to young girls to prevent the low risk of preventable death half a century from now ought to be 100% safe. And this vaccine isn't even close. Both Merck and Glaxo disclosed in their shareholders' reports that profitable performances by their flagship HPV vaccines were top indicators of shareholder value. Gardasil has been a top seller for Merck, earning total global sales of $1.2 billion in 2011, a windfall for the company floundering to recover from a $7 billion court settlement related to criminal charges that the company had knowingly killed between 100,000 and 500,000 Americans by defrauding customers about the safety of its blockbuster pain pill Vioxx. Merck's executives nicknamed the HPV vaccine "Help Pay for Vioxx" and fast-tracked it to market after shoddy safety tests under pressure from Wall Street analysts itching to downgrade Merck's buy recommendations. At least 1,200 of the girls in Gates's study, 1 in 20, suffered severe side effects, including autoimmune and fertility disorders. 7 died, about 10 times the U.S. death rates for cervical cancer, which almost never kills the young. India's Federal Ministry of Health suspended the trials and appointed an expert parliamentary committee to investigate the scandal. Indian government investigators found that Gates-funded researchers at PATH committed pervasive ethical violations, pressuring vulnerable village girls into the trial, bullying illiterate parents, and forging consent forms. Gates provided health insurance for his PATH staff, but not to any participants in the trials, and refused medical care to the hundreds of injured girls. The PATH researchers targeted girls at ashram pathshalas, boarding schools for tribal children, to dodge the need to seek parental consent for the shots. They gave the girls HPV immunization cards that were printed in English, which the girls couldn't read. They did not tell the girls that they were part of a clinical trial, and instead hoodwinked them with the lie that these were wellness shots that would guarantee lifelong protection against cancer. That was not true. PATH conducted the trials in impoverished rural areas that lacked mechanisms for tracking the adverse effects and had no system for recording major adverse reactions to the vaccines, something legally mandated for large-scale clinical trials. In 2010, the Indian Council of Medical Ethics found that the Gates Group had violated India's ethical protocols. In August 2013, a special parliamentary committee excoriated PATH, stating that the NGO's sole aim has been to promote the commercial interests of HPV vaccine manufacturers who would have reaped windfall profits had PATH been successful in getting the HPV vaccine included in the UIP, Universal Immunization Program of the country. According to Dr. Colin Gonsalves, senior counsel of the Supreme Court of India, the Indian Parliament formed a committee, and it was to be a rather surprising move because you generally don't often have such a high-level inquiry into matters affecting poor people, and that was such an extraordinary report. I don't think the Indian Parliament has ever come out with such a scathing report. And the government officials came out and said, "We shouldn't have authorized this, we're sorry, and we're not going to allow them again," and now they are back, doing their same old tricks again. In 2013, 2 separate groups of health activists and human rights advocates filed public interest litigation, PIL, petitions calling on India's Supreme Court to investigate the HPV trials and determine whether PATH and other stakeholders responsible for the trial should be held liable for financial damages in relation to the families of the 7 deceased girls. One of the lead petitioners, Amar Jasani, a physician who directs the Center for Studies in Ethics and Rights in Mumbai, told Professor Magoi that he regrets that he did not add the Gates Foundation as a defendant. The ethical guidelines of the Indian Council for Medical Research talks about totality of responsibility. It defines the totality of responsibility in terms of everybody. That means sponsor involved, Jasani said. Under that principle, everyone should be held responsible. There is also no evidence at the moment that the Gates Foundation took any steps to discipline PATH for the research it carried out in India. I think to some extent the Gates Foundation thinks PATH has done nothing wrong, and that is a concern. One needs to get a spotlight on the Gates Foundation. The case is now before the country's Supreme Court. CDC cited Merck's and Gates's cheery assessments of the grotesque Indian experiments to help justify its expanded recommendation for the Gardasil vaccine. Prior to COVID-19, Gardasil was the most dangerous vaccine ever licensed, accounting for some 22% of cumulative injuries from all adverse events reported to the U.S. Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, VAERS. During clinical trials, Merck was unable to show that Gardasil was effective against cervical cancers. Instead, the studies showed the vaccine actually increases cervical cancer by 46.3% in women exposed to HPV prior to vaccination, perhaps one-third of all women. According to Merck's clinical trial reports, the vaccine was associated with autoimmune diseases in 1 out of every 39 women. Since introduction of that vaccine in 2006, thousands of girls have reported debilitating autoimmune diseases, and cancer rates have skyrocketed in young women. HPV vaccines and fertility. Gates's strong patronage of HPV vaccines, Gardasil and Cervarix, deepened suspicions that he was weaponizing vaccination against human fertility. Merck's clinical trials showed strong signals for reproductive harm from Gardasil. People in the study suffered reproductive problems, including premature ovarian failure at 10 times background rates. Female fertility has dropped precipitously beginning in 2006 in the United States, coterminous with Gardasil uptake. Historical drops in fecundity have occurred in every nation with high Gardasil uptake. Hepatitis B. The conspiracy by Gavi, WHO, and UNICEF to force India to mandate hepatitis B vaccines is yet another illustration of how, under Bill Gates's hegemony, vaccine industry profits trump public health. The WHO initially recommended hepatitis B vaccination only in countries with high incidence of hepatocellular carcinoma, HCC, the species of liver cancer that the vaccine promises to abolish. Since HCC is rare in India, the country did not qualify under WHO's initial criteria, which recommended the vaccine only in nations with significant HCC. WHO's policy meant the vaccine manufacturers would lose a market of 1.3 billion people. Notwithstanding such concerns about the high costs and meager benefits of the vaccine, Gates, through his surrogates at Gavi, PATH, and WHO, successfully arm-twisted the Indian government in 2007 and 2008 into introducing the hepatitis B vaccines. Gavi pushed WHO to change the official policy to a universal recommendation, meaning that even countries with low disease burdens would be required to vaccinate. Gavi hoped this would reopen the Indian markets. WHO obligingly changed its recommendation to include universal immunization with hepatitis B vaccine for all countries, even those where HCC was not a problem. The Indian government obediently adopted WHO's recommendation. Indian academics and public health officials condemned the government's hepatitis B mandates, citing India's extremely low burden from HCC. The Indian Cancer Registry, ICMR, shows the incidence of hepatocellular carcinoma due to hepatitis B infection is only 5,000 cases a year. Independent scientists and Indian physicians argued against immunizing 25 million babies each year to theoretically prevent 5,000 cases of HCC. Anti-cancer vaccines are poor performers, and there is not even meager proof that the vaccine can prevent any cancers. Dr. Jacob M. Puliel, M.D., chair of the Department of Pediatrics, St. Stephen's Hospital, Delhi, told me that, even if the vaccine were 100% effective, the need to administer 15,000 vaccines to infants to prevent a single death from HCC that might occur decades later intuitively seems an uneconomic way to spend scarce health resources. In a July 17, 1999 commentary published in BMJ, Dr. Pulliel observed that the cheapest Indian hepatitis B vaccine costs 360 rupees, or $5 for 3 doses. Dr. Pulliel points out that a third of India's population earns less than 57 rupees per capita per month. The main causes of death in India are diarrhea, respiratory infections, and malnutrition, Pulliel says. Should immunization against hepatitis B take priority over provision of clean drinking water? The study of Gates's forced introduction of hepatitis B vaccines in India showed that the vaccine did not reduce hepatitis B. The frequency of chronic carriers, HBsAg positivity, was similar in the unvaccinated as in the vaccinated. The study further suggested that maternal immunity was protecting newborn babies from infection at the time when they are most vulnerable to develop chronic carrier status and HCC, and that the vaccine program reduces this natural immunity. Paradoxically, therefore, there is a substantial likelihood that Gates's vaccine is increasing the incidence of HCC in the country. These findings demonstrated the absurd futility of hepatitis B vaccination in India. No matter, says Pulliel, Gates's opinion was the only thing that counted. WHO stood firm, taking the position that all countries must include hepatitis B vaccine in their immunization program, even if the vaccine was unnecessary. Haemophilus influenzae B, HIB. WHO followed its hepatitis B debacle with a much weaker recommendation for vaccination against Haemophilus influenzae type B, HIB. WHO recommended HIB vaccines only in nations suffering a grave disease burden. In an editorial in the bulletin of the WHO, Indian doctors questioned the need for HIB vaccine in Asia, where the incidence of invasive HIB disease was extremely low, Lao 1999. In 2002, Dr. Thomas Chirian, who is now the WHO coordinator of EPI, wrote that based on the available data, HIB vaccine should not be recommended for routine use in India. To overcome such meddling from India's prying medical community, in 2005, Gates funded through Gavi a 4-year, $37 million study of mass vaccination with HIB jabs in Bangladesh, intending to showcase the vaccine's benefits. Gavi's Bangladesh study backfired, showing no advantage from HIB vaccination. In response, a formidable coterie of superstar international health experts, all of them coincidentally from Gates-funded organizations WHO, Gavi, UNICEF, USAID, Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, and CDC, issued a deceitful proclamation that fraudulently claimed that the Bangladesh study proved a HIB jab protects children from significant burden of life-threatening pneumonia and meningitis. Prominent Indian doctors responded with outraged commentaries in the British Medical Journal and the Indian Journal of Medical Research, describing the Gates-funded study as a devious artifice. Based on Gates's orchestrated guile, WHO in 2006 took the official position that the HIB vaccine should be included in all routine immunization programs. Once again, the Indian government caved in to Gates and mandated HIB vaccines in India, where HIB invasive disease was nearly non-existent. In self-congratulatory articles, Gavi boasted triumphantly of its role in rescuing the HIB vaccine project in India after the Bangladesh study proved the vaccine a worthless waste of money, Gavi 2007, Levine et al. 2010. Gavi's article notes that since there was little burden from HIB disease in India, it had been a great challenge to gin up support for WHO's recommendation. Gavi bragged, in technocratic argot, that it twisted WHO's arm to revise WHO's HIV vaccine policy from a weak permissive statement to a firm recommendation calling for universal vaccine introduction in all countries. WHO's Volt Foss dragooned reticent Indian health officials to recommend the useless vaccine. Dr. Puliel complains that incident highlights the influence Gavi and other vaccine manufacturer-funded organizations like the HIB Initiative have on the WHO and how it impacts vaccine uptake internationally. Puliel protests that the Gates Foundation has privatized and monetized international public health policy, transforming WHO recommendations into effective mandates and compelling poor countries to pay annual tribute to foreign pharma overlords. Puliel told me that India and other Asian nations are now effectively compelled to administer the vaccine and to increase HIB uptake targets, irrespective of an individual country's disease burden, notwithstanding of natural immunity attained within the country against the disease, and not taking into account the rights of sovereign states to decide how they use their limited resources. He adds that the mandate and wisdom of issuing such a directive for a disease that has little potential of becoming a pandemic needs to be questioned. Dr. Puliel's commentary in the BMJ denounced Gates and Gavi for pushing HIB vaccine in developing countries and for falsifying the characterization of the research data in their press release. The directive has come after a number of failed attempts to convince the scientific community of the need for this vaccine in Asia. Puliel described the HIB saga as a case study on the visible and invisible pressures brought to bear on governments to deploy expensive new vaccines. Pentavalent vaccine. Despite Gates's victory in winning recommendations for HIB and hepatitis B in Asia, actual uptake rates disappointed the pharma mikados. Defying the WHO and Indian Health Ministry recommendations, local physicians stonewalled the jab. Most Indians had never heard of either illness. Dr. Puliel told me Indian doctors were not impressed by the need for either HIB or hepatitis B jabs and seldom recommended them to patients. Physician resistance stymied Indian health officials from meeting WHO's uptake metrics for the newly recommended shots. To overcome this problem, pharma introduced a diabolically cunning strategy to euthanize three birds with one stone. The companies withdrew their flagging HIB and hepatitis B vaccines and reissued a new concoction that combined those immunizations with the DTP, which, despite its popularity, had become another sandbag on Big Pharma's profit ambitions. By 2008, Pfizer's DTP patent was long expired, and there were 63 manufacturers making the vaccine in 42 countries with large surpluses and very low margins. The Gates cabal solved these profiteering problems by brewing up a new five diseases vaccine by mixing the DTP, HIB, and hepatitis B formulas in a single syringe. That new combination became a new vaccine. The Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunizations, Gavi, and WHO christened the novel, untested, and unlicensed concoction the pentavalent vaccine and recommended its use in developing countries to replace the DTP vaccine. Compliant Indian health ministries then phased out the DTP, which had been popular with doctors. Now, if any physician or individual wanted DTP, their only choice would be the pentavalent vaccine. On its website, Gavi admitted that its underlying reason for this caper was to increase the uptake of the hepatitis B and Hib vaccines in these countries by piggybacking on the well-accepted DTP vaccine. It was an ingenious money-making connivance. Competition had driven down the cost of the DTP to 15.50 rupees, about 14 cents U.S. The hepatitis B vaccine retailed for 45 rupees and the Hib for 25. Therefore, the combined cost of all three vaccines, if purchased separately, was 185 rupees. However, the new pentavalent vaccine, made by Gates's friend Cyrus Poonawalla, owner of the Serum Institute of India, costs 550 rupees, a 1,440% increase in profits for every vaccine sold. The Food and Drug Administration, FDA, has not licensed the combination vaccine for either safety or efficacy, and developed countries do not use it. A Cochrane meta-analysis showed that the combination is less effective than the vaccines given separately. Furthermore, the pentavalent vaccine is life-threatening to infants. Before its Indian debut, Bhutan, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, and Vietnam previewed the pentavalent jab. In each of these countries, unexplained deaths followed immunization. Bhutan suspended the immunization program in October 2009 after 5 cases of encephalopathy encephalitis occurred following the vaccine. WHO persuaded health officials to resume the program, insisting that viral meningoencephalitis caused the deaths. Bhutan obeyed, and 4 infants died. Bhutan no longer uses the pentavalent vaccine. The Director of Public Health, Dr. Ugyen Dofu, observes that there have been no more cases of meningoencephalitis among infants after the vaccine was withdrawn. Sri Lanka unleashed the pentavalent vaccine in January 2008 and then suspended the program 4 months later after 5 babies died. Under pressure from WHO, Sri Lanka reintroduced the vaccine in 2010. Between 2010 and 2012, there were 14 additional deaths following the vaccine, making the total number of deaths in Sri Lanka 19. Vietnam introduced the pentavalent jab in June 2010 and suspended the jab in May 2013 after 27 infant deaths. The experience in Pakistan was similar, including at least 3 reported deaths. India introduced pentavalent vaccine in December 2011. Up to the first quarter of 2013, health officials reported 83 serious adverse events following immunization, AEFI. 21 babies have died in India following immunization with the pentavalent vaccine. Gates and WHO simply trivialized the deaths as sad coincidences or collateral damage. The vaccine has effectively reduced the incidence of Hib disease in India. However, there has been a proportionate increase in non-Hib strains of H. influenzae, including non-serotypable strains, causing invasive disease in the post-Hib vaccine era. As usual, there was no accounting. This is only one of many examples of the Gates Foundation prioritizing the mandate for high-cost vaccines in the national immunization programs that Bill Gates effectively controls. Putting aside questions about net costs and benefits from these dangerous jabs, McGoey agrees with Pouliel that the diversion of sanitation and nutrition money is also deadly. The problem is that by prioritizing the delivery of expensive vaccines, other proven interventions lose out. Real-world evidence, including his investments in pharmaceutical, petroleum, chemical, and GMO processed and synthetic food, suggests that Gates's obsession with vaccines does not evince any genuine commitment to healthy populations. According to Amy Goodman, Gates owns investments in 69 of the world's worst polluting companies. His single-minded obsession with vaccines seems to serve his impulse to monetize his charity and to achieve monopoly control over global public health policy. His strategies and corporate alliances in the food, public health, and education sectors may also reflect messianic conviction that he is ordained to save the world with technology, top-down centralized cookie-cutter solutions to complex human problems, and a godlike willingness to experiment with the lives of lesser humans. And Gates's vaccine cartel has amassed Midas-like riches. Early in 2021, a TV interviewer, Becky Quick, observed that Gates had spent $10 billion on vaccines over the past two decades and asked Gates, "You've figured out the return on investment for that, and it kind of stunned me. Can you walk us through the math?" Gates responded, "We see a phenomenal track record. There's been over a 20-to-1 return. So if you just looked at the economic benefits, that's a pretty strong number." The interviewer pressed him, "If you had put that money into an S&P 500 and reinvested the dividends, you'd come up with something like $17 billion. But you think it's $200 billion. Gates continued, "Here, yeah," hastening to add that helping young children live, get the right nutrition, contribute to their countries, that has a payback that goes beyond any typical financial return. The key to it all, he added, is having that big portfolio. And the key to much of that portfolio is having Anthony Fauci. Please go to the Children's Health Defense website for the acknowledgments, endnotes by chapter, updates to data, and new information that becomes available on any of the subject matter covered in this audiobook.